What's up, guys? This is Jason. Welcome to Sports Spectrum. We got a great conversation today with Terrell Fletcher, former San Diego Chargers quarterback. He played eight seasons, and all eight of them were with the Chargers from 1995 to 2002. Second round selection in the 1995 NFL draft by the Chargers out of Wisconsin. He was a Rose Bowl winner in 94. He was the MVP of the Hall of Fame Outback Bowl in 95. And he was there at the tail end of his career when LaDainian Tomlinson was drafted, when Drew Brees was drafted into that Chargers organization. There's a lot to talk about because Terrell Fletcher pivoted from the NFL to becoming a pastor. For 17 years, he was a pastor. And there's a lot to talk about with this former Chargers running back. It's coming up in a moment. First, I want to tell you about our Sports Spectrum magazine. I think it's the best thing that we do here at Sports Spectrum. And you right now can get 15% off a one-year subscription by using the code podcast15. You go to sportspectrum.com. You'll see the magazine icon. You click it, you subscribe, use the podcast15 code, and you're good to go for 15% off a one-year subscription. We keep the magazine affordable, but this is a better way to give you a deal. And right now is the perfect time here early in the football season. The fall is coming very soon. And we've got Kirk Cousins on the cover of our Sports Spectrum magazine. A great story about Kirk and the Vikings and his faith and love in Jesus. Perfect content for the kids. Perfect content for that football-loving, Jesus-loving fan in your life. Go to sportspectrum.com. Click that magazine icon, put in the code podcast15, save 15% off. Do it today at sportspectrum.com. Terrell Fletcher, welcome to Sports Spectrum, buddy. How are you?
I'm great, Jason. It's a pleasure to be here, man. Thanks for having me.
It's great to see you. Great to talk to you. It's one thing to see you and talk to you. It's another to do my research and see when your birthday is. And I just like to do that with all of my guests, if I can find it. Sometimes you can't find it online, but I found it because it's out there. You're a public figure, obviously, former NFL player. And I realized you're 3 days earlier than I was born, which means in just a few days, you and I are both going to be 50. I'm becoming more and more okay with the idea of calling myself 50. For a while, I was struggling with it. How are you feeling about approaching the age of 50?
Man, I'm good with it. My wife and I, we have a major trip planned for our 50th. And so I'm going to get out and really celebrate it. And I've always tried to do this, Jason. I've always tried to celebrate every decade birthday. Yeah. You know, more kind of like a coming of age type of thing. So I'm embracing it, man. I'm looking forward to it. Come on, man. Come to the light. It's
good. I'm not scared of it. It sounds old because when I was 20 or 10 or even 30, 50 sounded old, you know? And now I realize like you and I'm not bragging here, but I think we look pretty good for almost 50 years old. You know, we're hanging in there.
Truth be told, you look amazing, right?
And thank you.
I honestly feel as good as I've felt probably at any point in time in my life that I can remember. I absolutely feel amazing. So just that part of it, feeling good, knowing that you're in a good heart space, head space, and having the pieces of your life around you work, that's what makes this work.
How did you feel about turning 20, about turning 30, about turning 40? Was there any... You know, because we're different people when we're younger, obviously, in terms of maturity. For me, 30 was hard. I don't know why. I think I had like these visions of being a certain place in my life at 30. You know, we hadn't had kids yet. That was a big one for me. I wanted to be a dad, and I wasn't by turning 30. Funny thing is, the next year I became a dad. So God works in the way that he works. But 30 was hard for me. Was there an age that was hard for you or not really?
Not really, man. I really did embrace all of it. Now, my father is almost 80, and he tells me that, you know, 60 and 70 will be harder than some of your 20s, because as long, you know, I've identified myself so much with my ability to do things physically, and that doesn't necessarily mean run a 4.3 40 and, you know, have a 40-inch vertical, but just to be able to do the things I want to do. Whether it's go out for a nice jog or go in the backyard and run around with the kids. And as long as I'm able to do those things. I've never really had a problem with a milestone birthday. So at this point, even at 50, I don't really have a problem with it. I have adopted this idea that as I need to dress my age. That's number one. I need to act like I've acquired some wisdom throughout the process. And the rest of it, I just let it go. Even turning 40, I was so excited about turning 40.
Yeah.
You know, I think like 40 and 50 is as juicy as the berry is going to be, yeah. You know? So I'm embracing them both. I want to maximize these years. You got to ask me again when I turn 60. Maybe I'll feel.
Let's do it. Let's do it.
Different in a decade.
When I turned 40, it was kind of like, ooh, 40. That's a number. And I think the most enjoyable decade I've ever that I've lived out of my life, almost turning 50, was my 40s. You know, because God opened up more doors for me to do things and experience things, to pivot in life to a different journey and be in sports ministry, to write a couple books, to speak. Like, that stuff wasn't happening when I turned 40. So to look at the last decade, I'm thinking, all right, you know what? You can thrive in your 40s and let's thrive in our 50s, right, Terrell?
Well, if you look at our country, you know, you can't let, if you look at the world, but in our country as well, you just can't let media make you think that every 25-year-old is a millionaire and everybody that's 20 is, you know, living the life. They're just like you and I were. They're figuring it out. Some people have enormous talents that they, you know, get compensated for. But the vast majority of people at 20 years old are doing the same thing you and I were doing at 20, trying to figure life out,
yes.
Dropping classes in college, trying to figure out if they even wanted to be in college. You know, all of that. That's what the vast majority of people are in this world. When you're in your late 30s, early 40s, you have experience and youth on your side. And that's a unique space in life to look at yourself and say, you know what? Not only do I have some ups and downs, some bumps and bruises, I also am still young enough to pull this stuff off so I can write a book that matters now or start a particular business that is not just for making money, but at the core of my purpose and my competency. 40 was a sweet spot for me. I was grateful. It was like you and me were similar. Even though my 40s was interestingly a difficult decade, probably the most difficult decade, it was still the decade that yielded the most fruit, you know, and God used my challenges. He used the wisdoms that I learned in the challenge. He shored up the people around me. All of those things were taking place in my 40s. And I looked up and I was like, wow, man, even though the first half of my 40s was a challenge, boy, God, you birthed a lot of cool stuff out of me. I'm like you, wrote my book in the 40s, started my first business in the 40s, in my 40s. Our church had some supernatural growth during that season of my life. And I tried to embrace it, maybe is what I'm saying. I tried to embrace it and not shun it or look like, you know, God couldn't use me or the time has passed. And I certainly don't let media and Instagram and IG tell me that I've got to be 22 years old and svelte in order to do something meaningful in this world.
Yeah, well, you said something earlier too. You said we got to dress our age. And I struggle with that because I'm still probably comfortable in shorts and a t-shirt like I'm wearing right now. And when we go out, I'm wearing like a suit and just hoping that it's somewhat modern in what my, you know, my interest is. But I'd also don't want to dress like I'm 22 either. It's
who
a real
said that flip-flops and shorts are not the age of a 50-year-old. I'm wearing them right now.
Listen, we can't wear them to, you know, to the wedding or anything like that, but we can chill in those for sure. All right. So pretend you're talking to the person who was half your age, the Terrell Fletcher in 1998, who was in the midst of his NFL career, a couple years into the league at that point. What's the advice that you would say to that guy, knowing where God has brought you to and where you are today?
That's a great question. And here's the way I would answer this. First, let me say that I would say all the things that you should say. Save your money, be careful with your decisions, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
But I would at this point to it, I would challenge each of these young athletes, and I do every chance I get, I challenge young athletes, don't stop developing the other parts of who you are. Sports and football, you know how professional sports is, Jason. It takes up every bit of your time. And if you allow it to, it'll suck up all the air out of your brain, out of your aspirations, out of your physical body. And you can't let it do that. The critical part of growth and development is knowing that there are many, many more parts of you, athlete, than just your ability to run, jump, shoot a basketball better, hit a baseball. There are so many other parts. Keep developing. If you like to read, read. If you're a traveler, travel. If you want to meet people, meet people. If you have other interests, develop them and develop them while you're playing. So pro sports is the parenthetic pause to development of the average person, meaning that if you play 7-8 years like I played and had an opportunity from 20 to 30 years old, and that was a pause on certain levels of growth and development in my life that my peers were able to go through. They were failing, they were winning, they were in their first they were taking their first tiers at their jobs, moving into the second tier at their corporate jobs. All of those things don't happen while you're in this little bubble called professional life. And when you come out of that, now you are thrown back in the pool with everyone else, and they're moving into middle management. They have 8 to 10 years of corporate and professional experience under their belt. You're this newbie that's 31 years old, trying to go through what they went through at 21 years old. And figuring it out is a challenge. And it's always a challenge for a lot of athletes, as you know and I know. So for me, one of the things I challenge men to do is, man, you're young, your bandwidth and the balloon of your purpose can expand so much further. Don't forget to keep developing the other aspects of your life, because that's likely what you'll end up chasing after you're finished with this thing called professional sports. You'll end up chasing that. So that's what I tried to do. And I was one of those guys. I went to college while I was still playing. I tried to learn about business while I was still playing. I was literally in seminary my last 2 years. I would go to class at night, practice and play during the day. And I'd show up to classes with ice bags on and and walking boots and all kinds of things, because that part of me, I didn't want it to get lost. And I didn't want to be trying to start over, reinvent myself in a world that moves as fast as ours move at 32 years old.
All right. So a couple things I want to follow up on, but specifically, and we're talking to Terrell Fletcher, former Chargers running back here on Sports Spectrum. I want to ask you about seminary.
San Diego Chargers should be the San Diego Chargers, but that digress.
You noticed I just said former Chargers. I didn't even say Los Angeles or San Diego. I'm not trying to offend anybody. I want everybody to be happy here, Terrell, in the California area, Southern California area. But you mentioned you were going to seminary while you were still playing. So somewhere along the lines, as an NFL player, you don't go to seminary unless you feel called to either be a pastor, go into ministry, or both. And that happened for you. You were in ministry and pastoring for many, many years, which we'll talk about in a second. Tell me about this moment or moments or the time frame when you felt like God was saying, even as a football player, this is where I'm directing you towards.
Yeah. Jason, I think you know it and probably could tell the story, all that you walked away from. But it's really a calling. I raise an eyebrow at someone that runs to this, right? Because you have to give up so much. There are a personal, professional sacrifices that you give up in order to chase something that God put in your heart. And I tried to approach it as that. I didn't want to fight it. I wasn't one of those guys. I was like, no, God, no. I sensed it. I have a lineage of men and women in my life that have functioned in ministry at a high capacity, that dedicated their lives to other people and to the Lord. So at the core, a servant is who I am, right? At the core, I knew that this was part of the journey. So I didn't become born again until right before, like literally almost right before I came to the National Football League. As the time went on, and I dug into the faith and I started to sense that God was elevating my voice for the season on our team, throughout the league, in the influence of the region that I have, I started to recognize that. And what I wanted to do was just not open up my mouth and not have something good to say. Yeah. So when I went to seminary, I need information. I need biblical information. And about a year and a half, about a year into seminary, a guy named Steve Witten challenged my whole paradigm about being in seminary, about studying the scriptures and all this good stuff. He said, Terrell, he said, you're here to get good information. And I could tell it. And that's not a good thing. Hmm. And I said, Dr. Witten, what do you mean? He says, we don't go to the word of God. He said, my challenge to you, rather, is not to go to the word of God just to get information, but to build your relationship with Jesus Christ. That was his challenge to me. And I'm glad he did that because it changed the paradigm for the other year and a half that I, the remaining year and a half that I had left, that it wasn't just information so I could speak, but it was also so that I could grow, mature, go through things with Christ,
yeah,
and have something to say and be able to articulate it in a way that encourages others. So yeah, it just kind of crept up on me. Before I realized it, Jason, I felt this overburdening, weight to satisfy this itch. Hmm. And that's what I did. I just tried not to say no.
So were there struggles? You said you got born again right before you got to the league. You went to Wisconsin and then you got drafted in the second round by the San Diego Chargers. Like two months after they went to the Super Bowl, by the way. So that's got to be exciting, going to a team that had just gone to the Super Bowl. What was that transition like coming into the league? And then we'll talk about the pivot going out of the league and into what you just described. But what was that like coming into the league as a new believer? And man, the world's coming at you, right? Like the pressures and the temptations and even just the desire to achieve and to be the best player you can be. A lot of that from all of the different athletes that we've spoken to on the show, that can get in the way sometimes of a person's spiritual development. So what was that time like for you?
Well, let me tell you, I've had some great mentors in my life and some great people. The chaplain for the Wisconsin Badgers at the time was someone that I had come to admire, really appreciated him long before I became born again. And what happened the morning after I gave my life to the Lord, I gave my life to the Lord at a Christian play. I got duped into going to.
Wow. And, okay.
And before I realized that, I was like, oh, I need this Jesus guy. And
that's amazing.
But nonetheless, when I only had about 2 weeks before I moved to California. And I called the chaplain and I told him my concerns. I shared with them that, hey, I don't want to screw this up with God. I just made this commitment to him. Yeah. It means a lot to me, even though nobody in San Diego would ever know, so if I don't tell him, but I have this, I want to do this right. I want to honor God. I want to honor God right. So what he did was something that was a blessing to me. He picked up the phone. He called the San Diego Chargers chaplain at the time, who was Sean Mitchell. Mm. And Pastor Sean, the day that I got there and went into the locker room, I met about four guys, namely Rodney Culver, who has passed away now,
yeah.
John Carney, who was at the time our one of the best kickers in the history of the NFL, and a few other guys. It was about five or six guys who loved the Lord, really dedicated in their journeys, came to my locker, and they told us, "Hey, man, Sean told us that you're a newbie being born again, and we are your testimony that." You want to do this, you can do this, even in the NFL. That was my first day at practice. If you want to do this, you can do this. And we just kind of set up a sense of accountability to one another. Rodney and I became roommates at the time, which was something he did not have to do because he was a veteran. He didn't have to have a roommate on the road. He was like, hey, man, I want to help keep you focused. We're going to be on the road. At the time, our team was a very rowdy squad.
Yeah.
And those were the guys. It was that kind of accountability that was around me that helped me through the process. So I would tell this to any young person who's coming in. Listen, God's got guys that will stand as a testimony for him in every arena, sports, entertainment, Hollywood, wherever you find yourself going, there is somebody standing for Christ. When you find them, humble yourself and give yourself over to accountability. Now, it's not, it was never about me being perfect,
Right.
never doing this, never making a mistake like this. Those guys let me live, and I grew, I made mistakes, I had things I had to take back to the Lord and say, Lord, this is not what I want to be and not who I want to be. I had my natural development journey, but I did have, God did put those guys around me that were kind of like my bumper lanes. So if I ever got too far, one of those guys would come and have a sit down and have a chat with me. So find accountability. It's in the locker room. And then when, as you grow and mature, be that accountability for someone, you know, become that person, which I eventually did as my time went along. I became that one of those voices in the locker room that caught those young guys and say, hey man, I see who you are and I see where God's trying to take you. I can support that, you know, if you let me in. You know, so let's have coffee or let's from time to time. Or, and I'm not the Jesus police either,
Right.
you know. So that was my journey, man. And that was so helpful to me. So helpful to me.
So throughout your journey, you have the unique distinction of having played 8 seasons in the NFL, and you played with the same team, the San Diego Chargers. That is rare, you know, in this league, especially even back then, though, as
It
free agents
was.
started to kick in the mid-90s, it was rare for a guy to play more than 5 to 6 seasons because they get to that second contract, and then who knows? I mean, the NFL was not for long, right? 3, 4 years is your average time of being a player. You got there for 8. So I'll ask it in this way. I've been asking this question in sort of a generic way to a lot of the NFL guys that I've talked to recently. But do you have a favorite God moment during your NFL career? You just shared one coming into the league and meeting those young guys or those older veterans as you, the young guy. But do you have a favorite God moment, whether it was in the locker room or away from the field? I'll let you answer it and just leave it there. So, what do you think?
I've had a lot of great God moments during my time in the NFL. There was one aha moment that I developed, where God kind of humbled me and gave me new perspective, and I've been walking with this perspective for the rest of my life. When I was getting ready to be drafted, you know, we were down at the Senior Bowl, and everybody at the Senior Bowl knows they're going to get drafted. And that's the place where all the big top dogs walk around with their chest out and they're going to show each other. And practice is super important. No one stays for the games. All the people come down to practice and watch the practice. And when we were doing calisthenics a day, and at practice, they don't separate north from south. Only in the game is that north and south. During practice, you all practice together. And this particular day, we were doing calisthenics, and Bobby Bether was a guy in his flip-flops and shorts down in Mobile, Alabama, and he was going around and he was shaking hands with each of the players. Now, 95% of the coaches that were there, the administrators that are there, they all have their clipboards out, they're taking notes, they are keeping that distance away from the players so they can measure hands and measure height and watch for temperament and all that stuff that, you know, that they do. And he finally got to me, and he stuck his hand out, introduced himself, asked me how my youngest brother was doing. Now, my youngest brother was a rising football player in Missouri at the time. And I thought that was really, really cool. I was like, oh, bro, he's doing good. Then he asked me if I was going to go back to school and finish my degree. I was about 6 credits short of finishing my degree. And I'm like, yeah, man, you know a whole lot about me. That's what I'm thinking to myself. He tapped me on the hell on my shoulder pads. He says, hey man, he said, you're a good kid. If you're around when we have our pick, we're going to get you. He said, until then, just keep being a good kid. You'll go far in this league. He kept on moving. And in that moment, I had this like unique feeling that took me until the later in the evening to really understand what it was. It wasn't just the fact that eventually, you know, 3 months later he picked me in the draft. It was that of all the experiences that I had, he never asked me how much I needed to bench press. He never told me how much faster I needed to get. He didn't tell me how much more weight I needed to gain. He didn't do any of those things. He did not make me feel like I was a commodity. He asked me personal questions and made me feel like I was a human being.
Wow.
And that was a very unique thing. He didn't, and it was not just that. It was about the things that mattered to me. He made me feel like my story mattered, my journey mattered, my life mattered, and all of that separate from the job that I knew he had to do. I told myself in that moment that that's one of the things that I want to do with my life, that I want to always make people feel like they matter when they're in my space. I want to give back what Bobby Bethel gave to me. And I fast forward that, because you asked about when I had my God moment in the NFL. It was watching Bobby in those years he was our general manager, watching Bobby Bethard just go up and down, shaking hands. And you just knew these conversations are not about football. These conversations are to make you know that life is about more than football. And Bobby gave that to me. I've been trying to do that since. When I realized and was able to identify what the feelings I had, I've been trying to do that for people and to people since.
That's awesome. No matter
your status, how high, how low, if you meet the mark, if you don't meet the mark, you matter. And that's part of why God put me in this earth, to give you this smile, to give you my heart, to let you know that your journey is a journey that matters.
No, that's awesome. And by the way, a couple months later, the Bobby Bethard that was hanging out with you at the Senior Bowl drafted you. So that worked
yes,
out well.
Sure did.
And I'm sure that day you were probably ecstatic knowing that that guy who had poured into you even just a little bit at the Senior Bowl was now going to be somebody that you were going to be playing for every day. So,
Jason, I got a funny draft day question. So on draft day, everybody calls you. You get like four calls. So I get like three calls in the first round. And first the Bears call, then the Dolphins call. And I'm thinking like, oh, this is head wracking. And when the Bears pick Rashawn Salaam, I knew I'd probably fall into the second round. So I was like, I'm going to get away from the TV. I'm going to go outside. And I went in the backyard and started playing around with my brothers and that kind of thing. Somewhere in the second round, my mother calls. She says, hey, phone's ringing, come in the house. And I'm like, Mom, nope, I can't take another heartbreak of a team telling me that you're our guy if this doesn't happen. She was like, no, I think this one matters. So I run in the house, I pick up the telephone, and on the phone, this is what the guy says. Terrell? I said, yes, sir, this is Terrell. He said, I told you that if I had this pick, I'd draft you. I'm looking forward to having you on the team. Coach, I'll call you in a few minutes. I got to get back to work. Click. It had been 3 months. Yep. My mother said, who are we going to? Where are we going? I said, Mom, I have no idea.
He didn't ever say who he was.
That was. I said, I have no idea where we're going. My father's like, you don't know where you're going. I didn't know until the next phone call. The three phone calls that generally happen. The next phone call was our head coach at the time. And he said, hey, this is Bobby with the San Diego Chargers. And I'm like, we're going to San Diego.
Yes.
So that was my draft day question. I had no idea for about 3 minutes where we were going.
My gosh.
And it just ended up being, I totally forgotten what he had told me.
That's
but
great.
It was funny.
I love that story, Terrell. All right. So I want to get to pastoring, because that's a gigantic pivot from playing in the NFL to serving in a church and serving God, right, in ministry. What was it about your NFL career, if anything, that prepared you to be a pastor? And, we'll talk about the post-pastor pivot that you might be going through right now, because that's a lot. I mean, I serve as an elder in my church. I know what it's like to be on that leadership board. It's hard. Pastoring a church is hard. Like you said, it's a calling. I wouldn't recommend people just jumping into it because they think it's a cool job. It's hard. But for you, what was it about your NFL career, if anything, that prepared you to go into becoming a pastor?
Well, I can speak from my experience, man. It wasn't a hard deal at all. I feel like most of my life, God had been preparing me for this type of calling. Yeah. And I understood at some point, maybe year three or four, I understood that me being in the National Football League was not just about me being in the National Football League. I do challenge young players to think about this. Why would God allow you to have this incredible, amazing ability?
Yep.
And then of all the millions and millions of people in your age bracket that have this incredible ability, you found the coaches, the school, the community that would usher you into honing your skills for you to become one of the 0.05% in your class that gets kept on this team. And then you have to beat the odds to make this team and to stay here for more than 3 years. Now, why do you think this would be? It has to be for more than just the fact that you can run fast and you can catch. And so you to score some touchdowns for 3 to 5 years, 10 years, 15 years tops for you to be able to do that. It's got to be for more. Mm. And part of your questions to yourself and to God is why? What else? What is the real reason? What is the purpose? It was in those moments, like the Bobby Bethard moment, there was a Ryan Leaf moment I had, there was a Junior Seau moment that I had. There, in these moments where the onion starts to peel back and you realize the layers of why God placed you there. Once I started to realize that and walk in it, then it was just a matter of connecting the dots of how God used me in the NFL was also similar to the way he tried to use me in high school and in other places where if I give you influence, this is what I want you to give back to the world. Hmm. And so as I moved into the pastorate and realized that it's really a position of influence to give a particular message, and it can become challenging because you deal with people and you have to make tough decisions. And then you've got to, you know, do the business of church, which is very different than the ministry portion of church. Yes. But it wasn't a hard leap for me to realize that, you know, the same things that really made me special as an NFL person, not just a player, an NFL person, was the fact that I got to motivate, educate, entertain, and inspire every person that came across me. And the NFL just allowed me to matter to people. That's all it did. It allowed me to matter. But once they said, oh, there's Terrell, I was able to really give them the stuff that God wanted me to give the world. Hmm. And so I was able to just kind of take sports and put it where it was. It's a great, you know, time of my life. I'm going to enjoy it, have lots of fun. But also God gave me the ability to situate my family in a certain way, gave me the ability to give the world all of the stuff that he put inside of me, the wisdom, the joy, all of those things, and to encourage somebody else's life. So when I moved in the pastorate, I said the same thing to myself, Terrell, what kind of pastor are you going to be? Well, I'm going to be the same kind of pastor I was as a football player. Is that being here, having this microphone is not it. What it is the ability to educate, motivate, entertain, inspire everyone that you come across with the word of God, to make them feel like they matter to you and to God, and to invite people into an opportunity of what that could look like for them for the rest of their life. Hmm. Like once I realized that, then once I got that, then the football was just a platform for me.
Right.
You know, the pulpit is just a platform for that. And I honor the position. I honor and respect what it means to be a pastor in this world. I also realize that the gift of it all that God gave, the overall pastoral gift, is not contained in a pulpit. Neither was any more than it was contained as a National Football League guy, because I shared the same gift in both places. And that's what made me, dare I say, different, and what kept me around for as long as I did. Because what many people don't know is my last 2 years, we drafted LaDainian Tomlinson and I didn't have to work as hard.
Yeah. You got to sit back and just be a mentor, right?
Absolutely. That in many ways, that probably was a part of my primary job. Yeah. But boy, man, did it open up opportunities for me to preach the gospel to the world. Mm. It was during that time I was able to go to seminary, spend some time, shoring and studying to show myself approved. It was during that time where we started to win again, which, gave a second wind of influence for all of us in our region and in the community. It you just have to see how God uses those things. So it was a challenge only skill-wise, functionally, but from a purpose standpoint, once I realized that, man, God has always been grooming this in me, and this is what God has always used to get glory out of my life, it was now just a matter of saying, how do I allow God to get glory out of my life in this, on this stage and on this platform? Yeah. And that's what it'll be for the next season of my life.
I was just going to ask you that, because the purpose never changes, to glorify God and to know him and to make him known. But the ways he uses those purposes sometimes change. And for you and I, as we head into a new decade here, I'm just wondering maybe where you see God calling you maybe into now that you, and like I said, me too, are becoming, you know, a new person. As we enter into a new decade at the age of 50, what do you see the Lord kind of directing you towards?
Yeah, well, I'm in a very contemplative and prayerful stage in my life at literally while we're talking.
Yeah.
Because I never say, and for some of your listeners that don't know, after 17 years, I did, you know, step down as senior pastor of the City of Hope, a very beautiful, beautiful journey in time. And we are growing together. I mentored the new pastor for almost 2 years before I stepped away, and the church is doing amazing. And I am on to the next season of my life. And I will never say that I'll never pastor again. I'll never say that. But at this point in time of my life, I do feel a call into the marketplace. I feel a call to use parts of the way that God created me in ways that I never, you know, thought about using as a pastor. I was really focused in on the church, focused on our community. It was not even in my mental ethos to elevate my voice louder. So over the next decade of my life, I intend to elevate my voice louder. I feel like that's what God challenged me to do, is to amplify. So I'm praying about what that looks like, what stage that needs to go on, how we go about doing it. How do I get in spaces, particularly in the marketplace spaces, that will allow me to influence influencers, to be important to people that claim to be important, to be a voice to people that have major voices, and perhaps even become a major voice myself. So I want to write more. I want to go more, you know, be more public. I want to be in your living room and on your computer screens. I want to do more of that in this season of my life. And really just, you know, like I said, I used the metaphor of blowing a balloon earlier when it comes to purpose. I feel like it's like blowing a balloon up when it comes to operating in your purpose. Every season is a breath. And I'm in a new season. I get to take another breath and blow more and just watch the balloon, the elasticity of the balloon expand even more. And that's what I'm looking to do in this season of my life. And I believe that that's part of what God is calling me into. So what that looks like, stay tuned.
Yeah, no, that's the beauty of it though, right? Like you have a vision and you have a desire, but the clear road that you're, or I shouldn't even say the road, but the place that your road is going to take you to isn't quite there yet. And that's okay, because that's the fun part. You know, they say that the journey is supposed to be enjoyed just as much as the destination. The journey is going to be fun here for both of us, I think, in this next.
I agree. What a great opportunity for us all. And I'm watching yours develop. It's just been a beautiful thing to step from one thing to the next. And I know that journey, because in many regards, particularly as men, if we're not careful, man, our profession will become our identity.
Oh, yeah.
And especially if you're good at it, then God tells you, hey, you got to pivot into a new profession. And you're saying, but you're not just asking me to change jobs, God, you're asking me to change identities. And that's where God blessed me. While I was looking for a new identity in my new thing as a pastor, God was trying to tell me that, man, I before I formed you, I knew you. Everything about you, I knew. I know you have the ability to make this turn and to make this pivot with me, because I put it in you before I formed you. And once I yielded myself to that truth about God and what he knows about me, it allowed me to open myself up to learn more about myself. So as I got into pastoring, I learned that there were other parts of me that I could be empathetic, and that I could be long-suffering, and that I could be a servant and not always on top. But sometimes, you know, I don't need the limelight, all the things that the NFL tells you got to have. And now I'm pivoting again. And for you, you're probably a few more steps into your pivot than I am, but now I'm pivoting again. I take those same things and I believe the word of God in the same way that God, you know me, and you know you would never call me into something where you have not already deposited the stuff in me to be able to perform it. Now I have to discover it. Yeah. And walk with you and trust you and have faith in you that it'll come out when I need it to come out, that you'll let great people like Jason and Jerry and some of the people we have in common, John, you know, help you develop it and pull it out so that in this next season of my life, I can be honoring God. That's ultimately where we're getting at.
Well, I love that, Terrell Fletcher. Listen, man, happy birthday, I guess, would be the word to say as people are hearing this. We're both pretty soon. It's going to be a big day for both of us. But this is awesome. I'm so glad we got connected. I know this won't be the last time that we talk. And shout out to our friend Jerry Madelon and John Lupo, both guys who somehow God bringing us four all together. That is two different people, by the way. When I think of my life, Jerry was a mentor and a guy from ESPN. John is not even close to being a guy that I connected with at ESPN, but still a huge part of my life in terms of ministry. So pretty cool how God works, but just appreciate you, man. Great to meet you, and I can't wait to see where God takes you.
Hey, man, we love what you're doing. We're big supporters of it, and thanks again. Anytime. Give me a call anytime. I'm back on.
And many thanks to Terrell Fletcher, former San Diego Chargers running back, for joining us here today on Sports Spectrum. Lots to talk about there. Lots to process, I should say, there from our conversation with Terrell. Loved what he talked about, that aha moment of meeting Bobby Beathard, the former Chargers GM. I love the idea of following his calling post-NFL career into becoming a pastor. I love the advice that he had to his younger self as he and I both get ready to turn the big 5-0. And then how about the pivot that he's envisioning here in this next decade to be an elevated voice, to point people to Christ, and ultimately to be an encourager, to be out there, you know, sharing the love of Jesus, but ultimately sharing how people matter, right? And how people are worth what they're worth in the eyes of God. Good stuff there from Terrell Fletcher, and I'm excited for him and where God has him. And happy birthday to Mr. Fletcher. In about a week, he will turn the big 5-0. So we appreciate him joining us here on Sports Spectrum. Thank you as well for you tuning into this episode, tuning into this show. Your support means a ton. A couple ways you can continue to support Sports Spectrum. Simply subscribe and follow this podcast on whatever app you're listening to the show on. Maybe leave a review if you're listening on Apple. And then really telling someone about Sports Spectrum is the single best way to support this show. Let someone know. Maybe post it to your social medias, to your Facebook or your Instagram story, and just let them know, hey, Sports Spectrum's out there trying to tell stories about athletes and coaches in the world of sports who love Jesus Christ. That's all we're trying to do. And by you sharing that, maybe that encourages someone else as well. So we love you guys. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next time right here on Sports Spectrum.